Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people.
Right.
You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one.
Quarter pounder with cheese in France, Mickey? What? Boy, ale with cheese. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly sacrifice at my progeny to you, a mighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success?
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave.
And I'm JD.
And just
JD. Only me.
Yes. Apparently, John is too sick to join us tonight, so we hope he feels better soon, and now we can just talk about him for an hour. I think that should be fun.
Screw that guy.
Yes. So how you doing, JD? Do anything exciting over the week?
We had a daddy little boy incident with the bathroom this week as we're potty training my 2-year-old. So that was interesting, but no. Nothing interesting. Nothing good. Nothing that anyone wants to hear anything about.
No. Thank you. Yes. I remember those days. Fortunately, my kids are now 24 and 16, so if they have an issue like that, it's on them.
Yes.
Daddy doesn't clean up after them anymore.
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't wait till this kid can start cleaning up after himself.
Yeah. Won't be much longer.
No, he's coming around. How you doing, man? What's up with what's going on with you?
Not much. Had an interesting week. I think we talked a little bit about the Potter Madness thing last week.
Yeah. You said there's something, like, I don't know. I'm so, like, on the outskirts of this that it all goes over my head. So let me hear this. What is the latest drama?
So yes, I guess we'll get right into it. We're not in the contest anymore. We were knocked out of the first round.
And as whooped.
As we mentioned last week, two of the podcasts from the Nerd Podcast Mafia were up against each other this past week. And it started out, you know, just kind of like bickering back and forth between the two of them, you know. It first seemed like it was maybe kind of friendly competition stuff going on. Some might call it a dick measuring contest. I don't know. The thing that makes it interesting is the person from the one podcast used to be a host on the other podcast. I don't know the whole story. I know they had some kind of falling out and he left and went off and formed his own. So, you know, and I talked a little bit about that last week and it turned into, you know, rivalry kind of a thing, right? Then all of a sudden, Potter Madness had posted a thing like, that's it. We're done. We're not. The contest is over. Nobody wins. Nobody loses. It's over.
What? That's how it ended?
Yes. So apparently, I don't know if I should mention names. I mean, should I mention names?
No, don't mention names. Cause I mean, like for one, you're talking to me. I don't even know who these people are. So it wouldn't matter to me anyway, but two, it's probably best just to keep, you know, just to kind of baby face yourself a little bit and not really get involved while still getting kind of involved.
Yes. So the one, it started out the one podcast without directly saying it, their initial tweets were they were accusing the other ones of cheating. And then all of a sudden, the ones who were accusing people of cheating, one night their votes jumped up over 100, like, instantaneously. And, you know, people were like, oh, this is a little funny. And then the other ones jumped up. And there was, like, all this accusation of cheating going back and forth between the two of them. And, but apparently what had happened was the first podcast that started off talking about cheating in their previous round, they were up against, another show, called the Let's Get Shitty Show, which I'll just leave it at that. I don't know them from Adam. I've never listened to the show. Don't know anything about them, but apparently that something happened that happened in their round. Like they all of a sudden their votes jumped up. The other podcast accused them of cheating. And they came out like, well, we didn't do anything. We don't know what's going on. Our votes just jumped up. So lo and behold, the round ended and the shitty show won, but then apparently was kicked out of the contest altogether for quote unquote cheating. Right. So like, okay. Then all of a sudden in their next round, they're accusing the next podcast of cheating right away. It just seemed a little funny to me. Right. And I'm like just, you know, sitting there with popcorn, reading the tweets going back and forth of these guys, you know, accusing each other. Like, I'm not jumping in, you know, I'm not going to jump in the lion's den. But I happened to, like, hit the like button on a couple of the tweets because I thought, you know, they were, like, funny or whatever. And all of a sudden, again, the podcast that started off accusing everyone of cheating DMs us directly and starts calling me an a-hole and passive-aggressive for simply clicking the like button on a couple tweets.
This is the dumbest thing I think I've ever heard.
So, Beck, how
does one Patel cheat on an online, on something that's voted on Twitter of all places? How exactly is it cheat? Like, how does one cheat on these things?
If you go on Google, you can search by Twitter poll votes and there are places that'll do it for like, I don't know, $10 to $100 depending on how many votes you're buying.
Why would anyone do that? Like, why? Like, it's so, like, there's just such better things to spend money on.
I agree.
Than to win an internet. I mean, like, I don't know, maybe just because I'm a jock and I just have that, like, I need quantifiable results and competition brain. But, like, when you're just voting on stuff and random people just saying, I like this show better, right? Just, why?
I totally agree. I don't get it either. And the funny thing is that every single podcast that is involved, I have listened to the episodes where they're talking about this, and they're all basically saying the same thing. Why would I buy votes? So I don't know. Here's the only thing I'm going to point out. Not the podcast themselves, the one that seems to be causing all the problems, but somebody who is a fan of the show and is an occasional guest host is who kept tweeting things like, drama draws viewers and more drama, more money and all these kinds of things.
Does it really?
Exactly. That's my question. Like, you look at, okay, let's look at the Kardashians, right? Like, what are they famous for?
Well, the drama, but the thing is, well, that's kind of their brand is like the show, right? And it's reality TV. It's all bullshit. But I mean, like, there's like drama cooked up on the show. So you're watching the drama, but if you're listening to podcasts, you're not getting that. Like, I guess I imagine there's some podcasts that, like, will be strictly poop talk drama stuff. But this isn't that. This is just, like, it's just pettiness.
No, I totally agree. And also, I think you have to have somewhat of a larger audience to begin with before drama brings things in. Like, this is a big thing on YouTube. I watch a lot of YouTube shows. And there's a lot of YouTubers who try to, like, generate false drama to bring people in. And it only works a small percentage of the time, and it seems like it works when the YouTuber already has a following. You know, when they're starting out and they've got 20 viewers, 100 viewers, like, and they try to generate some kind of false drama, it doesn't work unless the person you're trying to generate the drama with acknowledges it or has such a huge following and they acknowledge it, you know? Yeah, it's silly. I don't know if, because, again, I mean, looking at all the podcasts involved with this whole thing, after it was all said and done, none of them had a huge spike in followers on Twitter. I'm sure none of them had a spike in downloads. So, yeah.
So all that for nothing. So you take a contest that's meant to be fun and meant to emulate March Madness and get everybody, you know, excited and having a good time. And some people get things way too seriously and people get feelings hurt. And now you just wind up with a bunch of petty stupidness.
Right. Yeah.
And people suck.
And that's the whole thing. And basically what I'd said to the guy who started DMing me, and it's like, I could tell right away, like, you're coming at me angry and you're trying to goad me now into a fight, you know? Cause like, again, it has to do with audience sizes and I'm not gloating. Sorry. I almost said bloating. I'm not gloating here or anything, but yes, we do have a large Twitter follower, you know, following. We've got 65,000 followers currently on Twitter. So I can see why you'd want to goat me into a fight to get me to publicly tweet against you. But I'm not going to do that. And I said this to the guy. I'm like, look, you have a halfway decent show. I don't think you're doing any of this stuff, you know, maybe I think you're just surrounding yourself with people that are doing this and creating this drama. And you don't do anything about it because you also believe in the back of your head it's going to generate followers, you know? So, like I said, you can either continue being on that boat and go nowhere, or you can try to do a decent show and separate yourself from the drama people. But my guess is they'll keep doing what they're doing.
Man. Well, I guess we're giving them the time of day by spending too much of our show on it, so.
Yes, we are spending too much of our show on it. But, again, I don't want to mention any names. I don't want to have them now attack us on their show, but we'll see what happens. Again, the people who really I feel bad for are the guys who are running Pottered Madness and all that stuff because Pottered Family, because it's like, yeah, they just wanted to have a fun contest to see what podcast people liked best, you know?
That's too bad.
So, speaking of drama, good segue, right?
Yeah, I'm geeked up now.
This is going into the we don't talk about Image Comics much, other than we've had a couple Image comic creators on this show. This story involves a former former guest of this show, Eric Larson. So for those who don't know at this point, on Palm Sunday, last Sunday, actually 2 Sundays ago, if you're listening to this, Eric Larson tweeted out a picture, and the picture basically had a picture of the Bible and a Spider-Man comic book. And above the Bible, it said, proof that God exists. And above the Spider-Man comic, it said, proof that Spider-Man exists. And as you can imagine, a lot of people were outraged by this story. So that's my... So going into this story, you're a comic book creator and a writer. Do you think he's doing this to generate more buzz around his name?
No, Eric Larson doesn't need buzz around his name. He's already one of the big wigs at Image Comics. He's got he's had the same book out for 25 years. It has its base. He has his fans.
I understand this.
I can tell you exactly what he gets off of this. He's been the ire of the Comics Gate folks, the self-proclaimed gatekeepers of Twitter who have sought after the fact of making sure a bunch of my friends can never get jobs again because they're dorks. Like, and Eric Larson drew their ire. And I think that, he probably is an atheist and he's probably trying to, you know, rattle some people's goats. You know, I think that's probably what it has to do with. And, you know, a lot of times on Twitter, people express their beliefs about or their lack of things. Sometimes I think that if you got a lot of people who you don't like and you know a way you can take a little cheap shot at them, well, why not do? Not saying I agree or disagree with the actual cheap shot itself or whether or not anything, but, you know, I do think it had the intended results, to be honest, because, you know, reading that article you sent me, like, it seemed like he upset the people he was looking to work.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I you know, it's that idea of getting someone's goat. But it just felt like an unprovoked attack. Like, let's take another person unrelated to comics who is great at Twitter war. And that is, Ricky Gervais, right? Like we all know, he has said some outrageous things on Twitter, right? And he has gone after religious people. But you can look through his Twitter, and he has said this many times. He doesn't just come out and say something. He usually attacks people that go after him first.
Uh-huh.
So, like, yes, he is an atheist, and he doesn't believe in God. So if you're going to go after him for that, yes, I think he does have a right. And he's a comedian, so of course he's not going to let it go to go after you. But I don't know. It just seems like when you're Eric Larson and you are, like you said, you're comfortable, you've got a fan base, people like you, now you're going to throw this out there to rile up some other people. Like, there's a possibility you're going to hurt your brand, I think, with a tweet.
That's possible, but I think in the long run, I mean, like, when he's got a well-established brand, and I think that anyone who's read him for these past 25 years or so kind of gets what he's about. And there's people that will do attacks. A guy like Ricky Gervais does this stuff because his audience likes it,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that a lot of, like, you read The Savage Dragon, it doesn't, I've never been a big reader of Side of Dragon. Not that I like it or don't like it, just I really never got into the book, you know, put that out there. But I don't think the people that got like really offended by that are, you know, Savage Dragon fans. And I think that's probably his assumption, you know?
Right. No, that's true.
I mean, like, you can say, well, you offended a bunch of potential customers. I mean, the book's been out for 25 years. If you're not into it, you're not going to.
No, so. And when he was on the show, we did kind of all agree, him included, that it's not the kind of book that gains a huge number of new followers at this point, because it is a continuous story. That is one of the rare things about Savage Dragon, is it reflects his own life at certain points in his life. So he was a 20-something when the comic book started, so was Savage Dragon. Now he's in his 40s, Savage Dragon's in his 40s, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, so it's kind of hard to, like, you know, there's so much history there, and he doesn't retell the origin in every issue like Marvel used to do, so it's hard to get a lot of new readers jumping on board. Occasionally, of course, you're going to, but not like you are, hopefully, with Marvel or DC. But
I think Eric Larson's the closest that we have to an actual, like, strip writer in this day and age. Like, yeah, the guys who wrote the strips back in the day, like your Milton Kniffs. Like, he's just doing his thing, and if you like it, you're into it, and it's working for him financially, and, like, he's got it figured out. Like, he doesn't have to go chasing, you know, leads for jobs. He doesn't have to email editors. He doesn't have to work to find work. I mean, so he's got this great freedom where he can be himself. And part of being yourself means some people don't like you. I think that's okay. Like, there's a great quote that I heard from, it's a wrestling guy who was like, you know, if someone doesn't like you, that's a good thing. That means you said something, you stood up for something, and you believe in something. Cause not everyone's going to like everything. You know, I mean, just having opinions means there's going to be people out there that don't like you. You know, like, consequently, I think the Comicscape people aren't going to like me after hearing what I just said. You know, like, and that's okay with me. I'm okay with it. You know?
I don't know. That's a tough crowd to go after.
Well, it's like, oh, I saw this. Heather Antos had a very similar quote yesterday on Easter, you know, another atheist-style thing. And she got, lambasted by the people that have been lambasting her for the past year because she dared to be a woman in comics, and then they're gonna, that was the number one goal of Comicsgate was to make sure she was fired, and she wound up getting a better, higher paying job in video games, which she doesn't have to deal with those particular jerks.
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, you guys, congratulations, you won? Like I said, that particular thing upsets me because I have friends that are on that list who are great guys, but because, you know, they don't bow down to the alt-right god that they're not, I mean, actual god, small g, not capital G, like the god of the alt-right. They get lambasted by, you know, the basement dwellers.
Yes, yes. No, and I go back to something my father said a long time ago, right, when I was young, and he was an Elvis fan, you know, and he said to me, like, I don't listen to Elvis because of his political views or his religious views or anything like that. I like his voice, you know, so I like what he's singing. You know, I like his songs and I like his voice, and that's that, you know. And yet you have people, and it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. It's like, this person doesn't share my politics, so I'm never going to read that book again. And it's like, no, if you don't like the stories they're telling, don't read the book. But if you still like the character, you know, and you like the stories, who cares who's writing it, you know?
I think there's a line that everyone has to decide what that line is, and where do you say, I mean, like, I can't read Mein Kampf, you know, like, I can't do it. I can't bring myself to read it. I mean, like, there's writers out there that have views that I'm just, you know, I can't get past the views to maybe the point, maybe I'm losing out on something for reading the book. I think that a friend of mine, Aubrey Sitterson, is a guy who's gotten beat up a little bit by the comic skaters, and that dude's favorite song is Stranglehold by Ted Nugent. And he'll completely come out there and say, hey man, this guy's deplorable, I don't like him, but he made good music. You know, and it's just like, and I give him a lot of credit for being able to separate art from artists. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. And I think that as we get further along, I mean, it's so weird, like, because of things like Twitter and Facebook, like, we're so much closer together, but at the same time, it's still like, there's still these great divides between people that never existed before. Like, it's so much easier to hate a person you've never met.
Yes.
You know? It's crazy where that is. So I just, it's tough, man.
I you know, I'm going to say it. some of my favorite songs are by the damn Yankees, but you also have to remember, I liked them before, you know, the internet was a thing, so I didn't even know any of Ted Nugent's political views at the time. But it doesn't change the fact that Take Me Higher is a good song.
I don't even know how to address that. I just never heard someone being a damn Yankees fan before. I fell out of my chairs. Yeah, I think I hurt myself.
Come on, man! They were the last like power band.
They were
had Styx and
they were well. They were, you know, Tommy Shaw, Styx. I mean, like, that was the final power ballad, and then they went away. Thank God.
Don't say goodbye. Just say you love me.
I can't even quote the band. I don't know the music well enough. Oh,
man.
I grew up in the 90s. So
yeah, well, that's when they were popular.
The mid to late 90s.
Oh, okay.
So I missed out. I missed out on the hair music stuff.
It's a shame.
I'm okay with it.
Are you? Okay, good.
I've somehow managed to move forward.
So I'll just end the story with this. I actually, like I said, Eric was on the show before. I've talked to him on Facebook quite a few times on different things. I did not reach out to him on this issue because I decided to include it today when I threw the show together. So Eric, if you're listening, let us know what kind of feedback you've gotten on your tweet, and you know. It was J.D. Wright. Did you do it just to rile up the right people? Because it seems like that's what you did. So I'll leave it at that. So we'll move on to now the Marvel Universe. And there's actually a story I forgot to include, but I did put it in our Slack. I just wanted to talk about it real quick. Did you see the video from Looper that I posted?
I did not.
Okay. So in a nutshell, they proposed that Thor Ragnarok majorly changed the MCU and nobody noticed.
Huh?
Exactly, because nobody noticed. So prior to Thor Ragnarok, we had two things around magic and mythical things, whereas magic was always described as science that mere mortals didn't understand, you know, or less advanced people didn't understand, and the Asgardians were not gods, there were just aliens that were mistaken as gods by the ancient Vikings, right? But in Thor Ragnarok, they call themselves gods outright. They all do. He keeps calling himself the God of Thunder.
So I know where you're going. Okay, I know where you're going from this. That line in the original Thor is spoken between Natalie Portman and Kat Dennings' characters and Stellan Skarsgård. At no point does that ever come out of the Asgardians that they aren't gods. You know, I think that is just the way these scientific community of the Marvel Universe had reconciled the fact that they were gods. You know,
okay.
At least that's the way I always read it. That's kind of I think that's right of Warren Ellis's run on Thor, because that's the way Warren Ellis always viewed the Asgardians. So I think it kind of, I always saw that as, you know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, read what you want into it.
Well, I mean, the Looper video does go out to show every time they use the term God of Thunder in the previous movies, it's never Thor who says it. It wasn't until Ragnarok does he refer to himself as the God of Thunder. So, exactly. People are, again, we know the super fans out there are reading what they want into it. I thought it was an interesting take on it.
It is.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, and is that even going to follow through, you know, the rest of the MCU? I don't know. At this point, it's too early to make any predictions on that too, as well. Well,
that's the nice part about the shared universe thing is there are versions and interpretations of things that exist that don't necessarily flow or jibe. And, you know, what is a god? What makes a god? What makes a being? What makes an eternal? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's all in the eye of the beholder kind of things.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, isn't all magic science that we don't understand? You know, I think Doctor Strange kind of puts that out there too a little bit, where everything is magic. They don't ever call it a science. Like,
right.
I don't know. That's interesting. Having not seen the video, I don't know.
Well, you'll have to watch it and get back to me.
I will.
All right. So now moving from Ragnarok to not Infinity War, but the one after. I thought this was an interesting one in an interview. The Russo brothers basically came out and said they could reconfirm the idea that Avengers was originally cut into two pieces, and they decided no, Infinity War was its own movie, and that Avengers 4 is going to be a separate story, and that true Marvel fans, if they heard the title of Avengers 4, would be scared. And that's all they left it at. So I figured we could have a little fun and speculate what story they might be copying for Avengers 4.
Disassembled was my guess.
Damn, I had the same guess. Okay. Jeez, there's not much debate here. Yes.
The article itself was so, like, it was beyond speculatory. It was just like, well, it could be, what could it be? I mean, this, like, I was disappointed. Like, oh, there's not even, like, a hint going anywhere. So you really are kind of left to take a guess. I mean, that was the first one that I thought of was either Death of Captain America or Disassembled.
Right. And I think the one that makes the most sense is Disassembled at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if they're going to follow the Brian Bendis storyline. I mean, I read a lot of things. You're like, oh, well, Infinity War is just going to be Infinity Gauntlet. And you left the trailer, you're like, no, this isn't even close to what the Jim Starlin Infinity Gauntlet story was. So that, which I don't want it to be. Like, this, like, Winter Soldier wasn't, and Civil War weren't really what their comic book counterparts were, which is fine with me, by the way.
Right.
So I don't really think that we can, I don't know. Like, I don't think you can expect it to be, like, lifted straight up from Bendis's book. Like, I don't think the Jack of Hearts is going to blow up Avengers Mansion. You know, but I do think that there's going to be, I think that's going to be where it heads, to be honest with you. No, what do you think?
It'll be Hawkeye in this story. blows up the Avengers base.
That's possible, actually.
Because I kind of feel, as we talked about last week, about the possible deaths. And, you know, with my kind of theory, we kind of agreed on this a little bit. Maybe Cap is the one who dies in this one. And if Cap dies, then Tony might, if they don't kill Tony, he would, at that point, walk away. You know, like, say, I'm not a hero anymore. And with that, be like, I'm not paying for any of the Avengers stuff, so they have to be disassembled.
It's possible. I could definitely see it going that way. You know, I don't, it's so hard. Here's what's interesting about this question about Infinity War, is that no one has ever died in this MCU. And they haven't said that someone's going to die, but the giant assumption going out there is that someone's going to die. And after, I think it's 10 films, we're all so emotionally invested in these characters that the mere rumor, and that's all it is right now, is it's rumor, it's speculation that someone's going to die, really has the MCU fan community in a complete tizzy trying to figure out the future. And it's so cool because they haven't done anything like this before. Unlike the world of actual comics where superheroes die consistently, like every quarter, someone's getting off to up the sales. And they haven't done that at all in the films. And so when it is going to happen, it really does mean something special.
All right. So I guess first off, Quicksilver wasn't special.
That's how, you're right. They did kill Quicksilver, and that's how unspecial the character was to me. The X-Men Quicksilver is a way cooler character.
But the other thing I keep coming back to in my head, and maybe I'm crazy, I could be both, is they keep talking about somebody dying, and you're right. At this point, they haven't confirmed anything.
No.
They're definitely like, Disney and Marvel have both shown they're not above using the audience's own hyping that they're creating to build hysteria around a movie.
Right.
But the other thing is they've confirmed that everyone's in Avengers 4 as well, because apparently they were filming them back to back.
Right.
So, and like they have set pictures of them all on the set of Avengers 4. Or at least that's what they're telling us.
That's what they're telling us.
So if that is true, how could anyone die if they're all in the next one as well?
So I'm a big pro wrestling fan. Pro wrestling is built around the concept of everything that you see is fake. How do we convince people that the work is real? And that's what this is. Like, they're working their audience. They're trying to get them thinking something, and they're going to do some misdirection somehow. We don't know what set photos are from what movie. We don't know if they're real. We don't know anything. Like, the best part about this is we've seen a handful of very nondescript trailers, which for a long time, trailers were giving away way too much of movies. Now we're learning very, very – they're going the Star Wars route, which they're learning very, very little about a movie from a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So literally anything is possible. They're literally working their audience, myself included, into a complete, you know, hysteria, like you said. Like, it's so successful right now. Like, I don't even know if they need a trailer. Just throw up a poster. This is coming out.
Yeah.
You know you're gonna see it, so why bother trying selling it to you? Like, I mean, it's going to work.
This is so true. This is so true. And let's talk about, you know, the fact that who's the one who, there's two characters I don't think you see in the trailer. You mentioned you see the one in, or both of them in the promo covers from Empire Magazine, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not in the poster, and they didn't show them in the trailer. And that was two characters. Originally, it was just Ant-Man, I said, but then I realized, I don't think Hawkeye was shown in the trailer.
I do not recall seeing Hawkeye in the trailer. Ant-Man's got his own movie coming out in Betwixt, so I think that if he is missing, it's because it's going to be some Microverse thing, or they've taken him off the table to do his own thing, or he's just that not important. Or he was so small in the poster no one could see him. Hawkeye, on the other hand, is somebody that is not... It's so weird. Everyone really digs Hawkeye in the comics, but the Jeremy Renner Hawkeye hasn't really done a lot to endear itself to an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems. So it's quite possible that, you know, he might be the most expendable Avenger, which is kind of, ironically enough, what Bendis thought in the Disassembled. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. But if, I do think that if they kill Hawkeye, I don't think it's going to have the impact that it would if you killed one of the big three Avengers or... It ain't going to be Black Panther. That dude's making way too much money right now. But, like, it's... Yeah, I think killing Hawkeye is almost too easy. Because they haven't done, despite Whedon's best efforts in the Ultron movie, I don't think that we like Hawkeye. I don't mean that because they're saying I don't like the character, because I do.
Right.
But I don't think that there's enough of an emotional investment. Like, he hasn't really had... Avengers 2 was supposed to be his story, but it really wasn't. Like, it really was kind of a failure in that regard. And you can kind of see the war between the studio and the director in a Hawkeye story, you know? And that's pretty much, right. I think we've said on the show before, it's pretty much Marvel's only major misstep, is that movie.
Yes. No, I agree. So, it's just interesting. I'm just curious at this point what's going to happen to Hawkeye. Like, you know... Is it just, oh, no one cares about him, and that's why he's not on the poster? Or does he play some kind of secret major role in this movie to, you know, make us miss him when they kill him in Avengers 4?
So I think you got a point there. I mean, like, they do need to do something with Hawkeye. But there's so, I mean, just watch that trailer. There's so much going on. And part of me that thinks, is there going to be any opportunity for anyone to get any, like, real character development in this movie? And I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, you've got this many characters on screen. How does it not just, you know, break down? Like, how does it not, like, how do you not have, how does care, how does any, I can't think of a word. How does any character get developed? You know, or I don't know.
No, I don't know either. I mean, you can't even introduce new characters in a movie like this because, yeah, it would just be like, what's the point? It would be so useless.
Unless the character, I go back to the Infinity Gauntlet. The only characters in Infinity Gauntlet that got character development were Thanos and the Adam Warlock resurrection. Like, so it's possible that Thanos is the driving force of the movie.
Yeah. You know? And it does feel that way, with all the promo stuff. It could very much well be, you know, like, even, you know, you don't get much of any of the characters. Like, there's no defining speech. And again, like you said, they're being really good at not giving you anything. But there's no, like, major speech or anything that they're kind of showing in the you know.
No.
But wouldn't it be funny if Hawkeye is the one that beats Thanos?
It'd be kind of good. Part of me thinks that'd be kind of great. Because he's definitely the Avenger that everyone's kind of poo-pooed and doesn't really think much of.
Right.
You know? So that would be kind of the least likely Avenger to do it. I don't know, man. It's pretty cool. Like, there's so many places they could go with this movie. And the fact that we know very, very little of it, other than the Black Order is going to be involved, and that a good chunk of it probably takes place in Wakanda. And that's it. That's really all we know.
Right.
You know? I'm excited. The more I think about this movie, like, the more fired up I get.
I agree. So, moving on from Infinity War into bizarre news. Apparently, somebody has stolen Stan Lee's blood.
This is, when you sent me this, I thought to myself, Dave got suckered with an April Fool's story. That was the first thing that went through my head. I'm like, this can't be real. And I read it, and this is, I take back what I said about this stuff earlier. This is the dumbest thing I've ever, like.
Yes. So first off, it was posted today, April 2nd, not on April 1st. And it's on comicbook.com. So what's not like a fake website. But yeah, long story short, apparently, and TMZ reported this, that a former business associate allegedly had a nurse come in and take a large vial of Stanley's blood, and they're trying to sell it on the black market. And he currently has hired a lawyer to try to get the blood back before they sell it.
Please explain why that anybody would want Stan Lee's blood.
I
read the article, but I want you to explain it, because my first thought was, oh my God, they're going to try to clone Stan Lee. Like, I couldn't think of anything else. But the actual reason they're doing it was even dumber. So please do the whole thing.
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on. The reason for this macabre scheme, it's alleged that blood will be used to sell high-priced custom pens connected to both Lee and Marvel. Pens filled with Lee's blood instead of ink.
Pens.
Pens. Yes.
Stinking pens. This is the stupidest thing I've ever... Who the hell wants to buy... An idiot. Like, why would anyone want to buy a pen that has the blood of any human being, let alone Stan Lee? That's weird and stupid and creepy and good freaking Lord.
I was hoping I could buy one.
Really?
Yes. No. But I don't want to write with it. I want a clone Stan.
If someone had said that, I'd be like, ooh, that's right out of Black Mirror. But I mean, this is like, that's an interesting, well, it's kind of hackneyed, but it's at least something. This is just stupid. Like, I want to make blood out of Stan, I'm sorry, I want to make ink out of Stan Lee's blood?
But my question is, how much do those pens go for?
Enough to justify stealing Stan Lee's blood.
Apparently.
Like, is there anyone that's made worse late-life business decisions than Stan Lee? Like, every couple months, like, for the last decade plus, I keep hearing, like, that he got swindled by someone, and there's that Stan Lee media company that tried to sue Marvel and get the rights to every character because they signed a bad contract with Stan. I mean, like, these things keep coming up. Like, it's crazy.
Yes. I mean, the poor man is, 90-something. Yeah, he's in his 90s. I don't think he's all there anymore. And the poor man is, you know, I think he surrounded himself with a lot of, you know, I think he surrounded himself with people who thought he'd be gone by now and they'd have a slither of his fortune.
I think you're right. I think he unfortunately trusted too many people that are just rotten human beings and has wound up as the butt end, unfortunately, of a lot of these schemes. And it's quite frankly disgusting.
Right. Yeah, so... Stan, we hope you get your blood back soon.
And if you buy a Stan Lee blood pen, you're a chump and a mark. Like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yes. But if you buy one, do the right thing and return the pen to Stan.
So we can recollect all his blood.
All his blood.
Now we're in... This is just insane.
Well, speaking of going from the insane to, yeah, it's about time... we had compared The Incredibles to The Fantastic Four last week, and it has been announced that The Fantastic Four are returning to comics. So, that's a good thing, right?
I think so. I'm pretty fired up about it. I think they got the right creative team involved. Dan Slott coming off an epic 10-year run of Spider-Man, whether you liked it or not. I liked it. You didn't. I'm probably not going to read Spider-Man now that Dan's off the title, to be quite honest with you. I'm super excited because his run of the Thing in like 05, 06, something like that was really good. The Spider-Man Human Torch miniseries is good. I think he has a great, fun view of comics. And the Fantastic Four has been off the table for just long enough now where I think something cool can be done with it. Like, I remember when Thor got taken off the table in 2004 because everybody was kind of ran out. Like, Dan Jurgens had a really cool run with Thor, and then by the end of it, there was just nothing there. They took him away. And then when JMS brought him back in 07, like, it was a big seller. And it really kind of helped revitalize the character leading to the movie. So I think actually pulling back on Thor for a couple of years wound up helping the property. I have the feeling that this could do the same thing with Fantastic Four.
I definitely agree. It's interesting, too, because it also goes hand in hand with a lot of those rumors that... You know, Marvel killed books to hurt the movies, you know. Obviously, X-Men aside, even though they kept rebooting and changing the teams around. But they did kill off Wolverine in the comic. because, you know, Wolverine was the leader of the X-Men in the movies, and so the rumor was they killed the Fantastic Four off because they, you know, wanted the movies to do bad, and now Marvel's buying Fox, let's bring back the Fantastic Four. But I think that's silly, because I don't think the comic book sales affect the movies at all.
They don't. There's no correlation whatsoever. Iron Man would sell a lot more books if the two were somehow in line. Like, that being said, I think Perlman is that level of petty. Like, he does seem like he has that level of, you know, well, if they're not going to do what we want them to, we're just not even going to sell these books right now. You know, and at the same time, that last Fantastic Four movie was really bad, and I do think it did damage to the property. You know, I don't know, man. Like, corporate decisions are really, really weird, and it would not surprise me. That being said, what's the last great run of Fantastic Four? Probably Hickman's. You know, Hickman's was pretty good. Before that, Mark Waid. You know, before that, Byrne. I mean, like, there's not a lot of Fantastic Four runs.
No, you have to go back pretty far for some of them. You already went back pretty far.
I went back to before Byrne. I was born. Yeah, I mean, like, Mark Waid had a really great run. I remember that was good. I like the Jonathan Hickman stuff. But there's been good creative teams on. There's just some properties are really hard to get your head around as a creator. And I think the Fantastic Four is one of them.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, you have to see one of the things, you know, with a lot of comics, it's, you know, the tragic story, the middle drama thing. And for a lot of these writers, sometimes it's hard to wrap yourself around the family dynamic aspect and still have some of that drama stuff play out, I think.
I think there's a lot of truth to that, because no one wants to read a book where Reed and Sue are divorced, right?
Right, exactly.
Nobody wants that. Like, the writers are like, oh, we need to create drama. But I mean, like, and that's the Spider-Man conundrum, is how do you write a happy marriage that isn't boring?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the key, like, I forget who said it, it might have been Waid, that the Fantastic Four aren't superheroes, they're adventurers. You know, and I think that's the best way to say it. But that being said, like, I think it's a hard concept for some writers to wrap their head around. That's why I like the idea of Dan Slott getting on board with it, because he does have a little bit of an old school mindset, I should say. So, I mean, like, I think he thinks more like, you know, I think he thinks more like a Roger Stern than he does like a Mark Miller.
All right.
You know? So,
okay.
I mean, I've never been a big Fantastic Four reader, but I think I'm going to, because this is not that great. You know, I like the Waid run. I liked the Hickman run. I only picked those up because people said, hey, this is really good. Now you should check it out. So I'm going to give the Dan Slott issue, like, when he comes out, I'm going to give it the first issue, go around and go from there. I'm just happy the book's back, because I do think it's important for the legacy of comics, you know, to have the Fantastic Four in print.
And Mr. Slott, if you're listening to this episode, I will read the comic if you unblock us on Twitter. So, that being said, let's switch on over across the aisle to DC. And speaking of comics returning from the dead, Hawkman is going to be getting an ongoing title going forward. The character who hasn't had his own book in some time is coming back. Let's see, who's writing this one?
It's Robert Vendetti.
Vendetti, that's it. Okay.
And I got to double check because I'm
Brian just Hitch. Blank.
Yeah, Brian Hitch.
Yeah.
First of all, Brian Hitch drawing Hawkman, pretty cool. Second, we just talked about our writers having a hard, creators having a hard time wrapping around the Fantastic Four. I think Hawkman kind of goes in that as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if anyone's listening who doesn't really get the Hawkman thing, you know, after post-crisis, they introduced another Hawkman. And the series took place in the past, but then DC tried to bring it up to the future, so continuities didn't mash, and then things just went all fakakta. And then Geoff Johns did a reboot in probably 2000-ish.
Yeah,
and that was It was like, it's such a great character. Like, whether you prefer the Thanagarian aspects of it or the ancient Egyptian reincarnation aspects of it, there's a lot of cool stuff to go with. But at the same time, tell me a great run on Hawkman. Other than Tim Truman's Hawk World, which was really
cool. Damn it. Other than Tim Truman, I can't tell you.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I read in Mark and Draco's Death of Hawkman series last year, and it was pretty cool. I mean, it was a nice little way to kind of clear the deck and reset it for this character. And Metal's been just weird and awesome. So I have hope, but at the same because it should work, right? Like I like the Geoff Johns way he interpreted the characters is Indiana Jones with wings and the helmet and a short temper. Like yeah. It should work, but it just I don't know, man. It just struggles. What do you think, man?
I think one of the issues is like besides having wings and flying, what are Hawkman's powers?
It's a good call.
You know, like and that's how people look at it. It's like, well, you know, and then what, we got an incarnation on the first season of Legends of Tomorrow with Hawkman, and they went with the ancient Egyptian tied into the them, Hawkman and Hawkgirl tied together forever, dying to always be reincarnated as the same, you know, two people always destined to come together. And it's like, how often can you tell that story before people are like, ah, okay, we know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think that's why he worked really well in that Geoff Johns JSA run.
Mm-hmm.
Like and I think Hawkman's best stuff has always come while as a member of the Justice League, the traditional Cater Hall Hawkman. I don't know. There's some characters I don't know if they work great on their own, and I question if Hawkman is one of them.
I agree. That's what I'm saying. Like I don't know if he works on his own. He's good as support for the Justice League or the JSA, but like yeah, I mean a guy with wings flying around, like you know, in a world where Superman and Wonder Woman exist, it's like, okay, well, what else can you do?
Mm-hmm.
Can you shoot laser beams from your eyes? No? Okay.
Well, I think that's when it comes down to what kind of character, like, what tell me about the character, like, what makes Hawkman tick? And I think that's where you get the best stories, you know, like, powers are superfluous stuff. Like, it's the person that makes him tick. And I think as a writer, you can sit there and say, all right, there's a lot of room for me to play here. Because there is. Like, and I think that's part of the problem of Hawkman over the last couple generations is that different writers, you know, Tim Sherman did a great job, tried to put their own stamp on Hawkman. And after a while, it just becomes a mess. I give you the Hawk God of Zero Hour, you know?
Yes.
So I don't know. Are you a fan of Vendetti?
No, that's the thing. Like I don't read a lot of DC. So it was like, I didn't really recognize the name.
He's the guy who took over Green Lantern after Geoff Johns, which is
okay.
That's a real hard act to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Geoff Johns redefined the character of Green Lantern, and since he's left, I think that the Green Lantern property has really fallen from prominence.
Mm.
Failed movie probably had a lot to do with that too. But I mean, I read a couple of his issues, and it just didn't do it for me, man. And I don't think it was bad because I really liked his Bloodshot work at Valiant, but it didn't grab me enough to make me want to keep buying, you know, a $3 comic. So I don't know what I think about this one.
Yeah. I'll probably pick up the first issue when it comes out just to give it a try. But yeah, I can't see falling in love with Hawkman. And I really know what the problem is, right? I can hit the nail on the head what Hawkman's problem is. No trunks.
Nice segue.
So yeah, so earlier you had thought that the blood story was an April Fool's joke, but DC trolled their fans on April 1st, and basically said that all the heroes were now going to get like because of obviously they said in Superman or Man of Steel 1000 or Superman 1000
action
1000. Yeah, that's it, Action 1000, that the trunks would be returning. And are not clear if they're returning just for that issue or if Superman trunks are coming back for good.
It seemed like they're back for the interim at least. Like Jim Lee kind of had I read an article, I forget where it's come from, but Jim Lee was kind of like, yeah, they're back for now. You can tell Jim Lee's not a fan of the trunks.
Yeah. Well, he redesigned the costume without them. So,
yeah.
So they released an image. We've got your trunks. And of course we have Batman front and center with his trunks back on. Wonder Woman's in the picture. I mean, it's kind of like, she still kind of has her trunks in the comics anyway. You know, they do her skirt on her sometimes, but it's like, okay. But then you have Cyborg, Aquaman, Flash, and Green Lantern all with trunks at this point.
It was cute.
Yeah. And of course, people weren't happy. But hey, it was a joke, so.
It's a joke. People take things way too seriously.
Smile and move on.
I do find it interesting though. They were able to take the trunks off of Batman and it really didn't lose anything from the design element. But for some reason, like, and trunks on the outside do look weird. I get it. It's not underwear. It's circus acrobat thing. But Superman without the trunks just doesn't look right. And every time they try to redesign him, sometimes it'll look okay, but it's just not Superman.
Do you know what I think it is with Batman versus Superman? It's the utility belt.
Could be.
He still has a big yellow utility belt around his waist, which breaks up
the color scheme.
The color scheme and breaks up the pants from the shirt. Uh-huh. Where, like, that's what the trunks, in my mind, have always done. Mm-hmm. It broke up the shirt and the pants from each other. Without them, you know, it's just a field of blue with a red S in the middle and a cape on them.
It's a unitard without the trunks. It just looks weird. It doesn't, like, you talk to any artist, they'll tell you the same thing. Like, and I know a lot of them art, it does. It looks kind of silly with the underwear on the outside, but it just doesn't work.
Yep. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I know quite a few artists that have worked for Marvel and DC, and when they do the unless it's specifically asked for trunks or no trunks, if they're just doing it on their own, they still draw Superman with the trunks.
It just, again, yeah, from an artistic standpoint, it just doesn't work without the trunks, man. And I think it's pretty funny. I mean, that's a great, they've been getting so much flack for over the years about taking the trunks away that oh, you want trunks? We'll give you trunks. It's a very Dan DiDio thing. And
yes.
I got a chuckle when I read it.
I mean, I think Flash looks silly with the yellow trunks. I will say that because, again, I'm used to him in an all unitard costume. And Green Lantern has always had a breakup in his colors with the green and the black, so it doesn't look right with gray trunks.
Agreed.
But yeah, I like Batman with the trunks back. Sorry.
It's old school.
I'm old school. I'm old. But speaking of old, going on to something completely new, and as a creator, I kind of have a lot of questions for you as a creator on this aspect. DC has decided to create a new imprint called DC Black Label to give creators power to tell new legendary tales. So the idea here is, okay, you've had The Killing Joke and The Dark Knight Returns and I think Man of All Seasons, Superman, A Man for All Seasons, is that what the name of the story is?
Yes.
Or What Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. These are all really cool stories that were told outside of the continuity of the regular books, you know, and they used to call this prestige format. Now all of a sudden they're like, okay, we're going to create a whole new imprint so we can tell more of these stories. Like, do they really need to create a separate imprint to do this?
Yeah, they do.
You think so?
I absolutely 100% do.
And do you think that's because they can sit there and go, well, that's a Black Label book, so that's not in continuity?
Yeah, it's 100% why. And you're right. In the prestige format stuff in the 80s, and this is why you have to do it. In the prestige format stuff in the 80s, you had some really good stuff that was being told that was meant to be out of continuity. Killing Joke was not supposed to be in continuity, and yet there's Barbara Gordon in a wheelchair for a long time. So now Killing Joke is continuity. You know what I'm saying? And there's been a couple times where that has happened. And I think that in the 90s, they branded it as Elseworlds.
This is true, right.
Where you got Gotham by Gaslight and stuff like that. And well, I think that DC's, you know, I think this really plays into what DC does great. What DC does better than Marvel, as far as comics goes, is creating icons.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think icons exist better when they don't have to do the month-to-month thing. And DC characters were never designed to be month-to-month characters. Like, you look back at the Julie Schwartz, Mort Weisinger era stuff. You know, kids only read comics for 4 years and they passed them on, and then you could recycle stories. So it was 1 month, you had a story and it was done. And then, you know, the pieces get put back together and Superman tells you get another Superman story. You know, and I think that that is the nature that those characters came up in. So I think they lend themselves better to these out of continuity stories. My favorite work of one of my favorite works of fiction, certainly my favorite comic, is Kingdom Come.
Mm-hmm.
It's another version of this. The New Frontier. Like, these stories work so good, you don't need to have them doing the month-to-month thing. And this Black Label tells readers, tells collectors, you know, tells salespeople, hey, you don't need to buy, you know, 10 years worth of back issues to get what's going on here. This is just a contained story featuring icons that you get and you understand. I think it's fantastic.
I agree, but why not just bring back Elseworlds or...
Well, because you get a new, because there's money in a new brand. Never bring back an old brand. That's old. it's true. That's one thing they fought the trunks for so long. Same argument.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's also the same reason, like, you can't just come back and say, oh, that's prestige format, because a lot of those stories got folded back into continuity. So,
right.
Yeah.
And then you're dealing with the baggage of the old brand. And then the Elseworlds, now we got to talk about Hypertime, you know, as opposed to this new 52 world, these 52 universes that exist.
Right.
You know, and you don't have to designate them. Like, you don't have to say, well, this takes place on Earth 47. Just tell a story. But if you want to say this takes place on Earth 47, well, you can. And again, I think DC was better when they weren't trying to be Marvel and fit everything into a compact little box. I think it hurts their film universe too.
Right.
Like, I think that's why their films can work better if they just do what they do and not worry about how it ties into everything else.
Yeah. This reminds me of one of the stories I've always found interesting about Jim Lee is when he came back, when he left Image and went back to, well, he didn't go back to Marvel. He went to DC. They gave him Batman, right? And they said, oh, you know, we want you to do a Batman story. And they said, you have an idea? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, okay, well, you can do it out of continuity. You can do it like a prestige format book. And he was like, no. I want my story to be in the continuity. And that was Hush, you know? And it was like, it showed you them, like, I agree with you 100%. DC's always been known to, like, create iconic stories that have nothing to do with the regular continuity. They just tell a really good Batman story or a really good Superman story and damn continuity. Where obviously Jim Lee came from Marvel and then came from Image, where it was like, you know, oh no, I want this to all meld in together, you know? So when he got an opportunity, he's like, oh no, it's got to meld.
Right. He had that Marvel attitude. Well, I want the real Batman. And a lot of people do have that thought of, I want the real suit. And then I get that. The month-to-month sales are what kind of keeps the company afloat. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the stuff that lasts the test of time is the stuff that doesn't necessarily have to be read in continuity. And to be fair, Hush really doesn't have to be read in continuity. The only, like you read it now, because you have, you know, Jason Todd thing and stuff like that. But I mean, like, mm-hmm. it's its own thing. And you didn't have to read anything before or after it to appreciate Hush.
Right.
Whereas there's a lot of Marvel stuff, especially from the 80s and 90s, where you got to know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, I love Chris Claremont. I'm a big Chris Claremont fan from my childhood. But, man, if you weren't getting into X-Men was the hardest thing in the world. And 30 years later, I think that's why X-Men is so hard for anyone else to write, is because it's damn near impenetrable. Because that's what the property was. Like, it made sense to one dude, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I'm go to the other side of it and, not other side of it, go to Spider-Man and, you know, this cool concept, this interesting concept, the clone saga starts and then 2-3 years into it, it's like, I can't keep up with all the twists and turns in this. And, you know, I don't have Spectacular Spider-Man number 43, so I'm not sure what's going on here in Web of Spider-Man number 22. So, like, I give up.
And that's me, too. I stopped reading comics for a long time, specifically because of the Clone Saga. One, I didn't like the fact that they were telling me the only Spider-Man I knew was not the real Spider-Man. Two, it was abuse. It's abuse of the reader. I mean, that was written at a time when the comic bubble had bursted, and the only thing that was keeping comics afloat was trying to get people to read month to month, so everything had to link together. And you're right, man. If you didn't go to the shop, because you can't expect the newsstand to have the next issue that you need at that moment. Like, it was just too much.
Yep.
It was way too much. You ever read The Life of Riley?
No. When did that come out?
Oh, probably like 10 years, maybe even longer ago. It was it's a little internet essay by Glenn Greenberg, who was an assistant editor on Spider-Man. And it's just 30, I think it's 35 or 37 part, like oral history of the Clone Saga. Mm-hmm. If you have a night where you can't sleep, just give that. I mean, it's a heavy duty read, but it made me appreciate the Clone Saga more than it did when it was going on. Cause I kind of got the inside story of it. And I actually developed an affinity for characters that I hated when I was a kid. And it actually made me really appreciate Kane and the Scarlet Spider and those kind of things. So completely off topic, but it's a good read.
No. Hey. There's a quote in the intro of this very show.
That's very true.
That when I talked to Tom DeFalco and he told the story about the whole thing about the Clone Saga from his point of view, it was like, all right, I have a better appreciation of it now because he accomplished what he set out to accomplish. So, Tom, if you're listening, yes, we're still talking about the Clone Saga so many years later.
And it's, if you try to read the books even and modernize, anything not written by J.M. DeMatteis is very hard to read.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, is for comic history, it's an important chapter in the history of comics because it's like, it's the peak of the excesses.
Yes.
Of what killed comics in the 1990s, you know?
And very I think much
sometimes
so.
I don't think we've learned it, but back to the point I was trying to make is that I think that both companies are at their best when they're playing to their strengths. Marvel is so good at the interconnectivity of the universe and making Asgard and Hell's Kitchen work together. Right. Where DC is better just, you know, hey, I got this Shazam story.
Which could easily be the argument of, you know, maybe that's what DC should stick with their movies.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, keep them separate. We don't try to build a big, massive universe like Marvel, because Marvel's been doing it for years in the comics successfully. Like, just do a good epic Batman, like the Nolan Batmans. Do a good epic Superman, like the Christopher Reeve Superman original movie. Or, and, you know, give us a good Wonder Woman movie. And maybe
which they did with Wonder Woman until it had a tie back into the Justice League movie.
Right, right.
Like, I really think that if they had made their own movies and just did their own thing and not worried about it even being in the same universe, just with a couple sly nods here and there, it would have been cute. And then you could have brought those characters together like they did in the comic. They do their thing. They go their separate ways. And it would have been fine. It would have been fine. But, I mean, like, this whole desire to have these shared film universes is doing bad things to movies right now. Like, everyone's trying to be an interconnected film universe like Marvel, and they don't get what makes Marvel special. Like, the Dark Universe, the Universal Monster movies thing, that's never gonna work.
No.
That's never gonna work. But I can't tell some exec that, you know, who's gotta pay for his apartment in Malibu.
Right. No, and again, I think the point they're also missing is, you know, these guys are trying to come out and announce this big connected universe, and Marvel didn't do that.
They
made Iron Man movie, and at the last minute decided to throw Nick Fury in at the end. You know, they didn't know if it was going to work or not. They just like, let's give this a try. But they didn't have this plan. Like, people think they had this huge plan going into it. They didn't. You know, I'm sure once they got to the third, fourth movie, they really started planning it out.
And I'm sure it evolved over. It's like anything that works, it's an evolutionary process. Like, you get an idea, and then that idea spawns another, another, another. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the big problem with the Green Lantern, which was indicative of where DC was going, because I remember there's a red carpet interview with Geoff Johns, and he's like, well, we got, you know, there's going to be 4 Green Lantern movies. And when I heard that, I'm like, man, just do one good one. Like, just give me one good one before you even think about that. And consequently, like, you got stuff like, oh, you know, oh, he's going to become Sinestro, or Sinestro's going to become evil. And I remember saying with my wife going, what does that mean? The little stinger at the end. And I, you know, I explained it, and she's like, well, how the hell am I supposed to know that? And I'm like, you're not. Oh, wait, that's terrible.
Exactly.
You know, and it's just like, and there's things they could have done to make it a really good movie, but they weren't thinking about making a really good movie. They think about making 15 movies, you know, and it's an unfortunate part of where Hollywood is. Movies cost a damn much money. You got to figure out a way to make them make as much as possible.
Yeah, but it doesn't work. I mean, and again, DC has announced all of these movies that we know will never be made. And it's just like, just go and make a movie. Don't say anything and surprise us. You know, I would love to be surprised that all of a sudden there's like, you know, like if they hadn't announced the New Gods, but all of a sudden there was a New Gods trailer popped up. I'd be like,
like what they did with Cloverfield in the Super Bowl this year.
Exactly.
Where they had the commercial, hey, there's a movie. You didn't know we were making it. It's on Netflix right now. And everyone's like, oh my God, I got to watch this new Cloverfield movie.
Exactly.
I don't even really like Cloverfield movies, but I got to watch it. Like, and it worked though. Like, I just think that the hype, I think that you have to earn hype, and DC stuff has proven that, and I love DC Comics, and this kills me to say this kind of stuff, you know, like, that's the universe that I connect with, but it just doesn't work. Like, what they're trying to do does not work. Right. Luckily, in the comic world, I think they're starting to figure out some really good ways to tell stories in their comics. So, I mean, like, while we can harp on the films, I think you got to look at Dan Dio and Jim Lee, who finally kind of went, you know what? This new 52 thing isn't really working. We got to reevaluate. And they've got some really good editors there right now doing some cool stuff. And they are telling different stories. Like, you're getting stuff that's kind of in continuity, like Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye. That is just weird, but it works. And it's cool. And now you're going to get this Black Label stuff that's going to appeal to the press, like, we'll call it the prestige reader, right? Mm-hmm. That just digs DC, and maybe he isn't the month-to-month guy, but he loves Batman. He likes the fact that Frank Miller's running a Superman story. Not for me, but you know, someone's going to be buying that. And it's awesome that these things are going to exist, and they can exist on their own and not have to worry about how this connects with that. Because that just gets, I don't know, maybe I'm getting older, but that just gets trying.
No, that's true. And I also kind of think that maybe that's part of this as well. You just mentioned the Frank Miller deal. Like, I would have to imagine, like, his stories are probably going to fall under this Black Label imprint, you know, because,
yeah,
like, oh, here's just a cool Batman story that has nothing to do with the continuity, but, you know, Frank Miller wanted to kill Robin again. Oh.
Like, it's like when Neil Adams had his Batman story that came out a couple of years ago. It's like this would have been a much better avenue to put it into, where you can just slap that Black Label, great name by the way,
mm-hmm.
on it, and people can kind of get what it is. And you're going to get those people that say, "Oh, cool, I like this Black Label stuff. Neil Adams is a legend. I'll check this out." It creates that prestige line again without going back to that old branding. I think it's great, man. Like, I think we need more of it.
Yeah, cool. Well, I think that's a good place to end that. Speaking of branding, as always, boys and girls, don't forget, if you're listening to this episode through our Facebook or our Twitter or any of the other avenues, you can always subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, anywhere podcasts are available. Don't forget to check out superheroespeak.com, where you'll not only find the podcast every week, you will find, rants and articles by yours truly. You will find comic book reviews by the one and only Matt Vroom. See, I remembered his name this week. And also the con season is coming up. And, just like I did last year with New York Comic Con, at every con I go to, we are going to, take a lot of pictures and put them right up on our Instagram. So make sure you follow us on Instagram at Superhero Speak. Of course, we'll tweet out about it at Superhero Speak on Twitter and put it on our Facebook as well. And, there is a Instagram gallery on our, webpage that you can always go to see all of our past photos that we've posted. And, so keep an eye out for all that fun stuff coming up. I always forget to say this too. If there's anything that you would like to talk to us about, maybe you have a question for us. Maybe you want to complain about something JD or John have said, because I know you would never complain about something I've said. You can always slide into our DMs on our social media, or you can email any of us. And it's always either Dave, JD, or John at superheroespeak.com. So, yeah, I always, you know, we need to start doing that more.
Yeah, we got to be better branding.
Yes. So on that note, boys and girls, as always, don't let your cape go out the door. Have a good week.
Branding.
I'm leaving that in.
I don't want to hear about it anymore. It's a shame I've got to live without you anymore. There's a fire in my heart, a pounding in my brain, it's driving me crazy. We don't need to talk about it anymore. Yesterday is just a memory. Can we close?